Hi there, Logan Clements here, one of your co-hosts with the Better Events podcast. And this week's episode is all about you, listeners, and the questions that you had for Mary and I about anything and everything events related. We touch on some of our questions came in about run of shows, about fundraisers, how we started our business. It's a good one. But before we jump into it, we do want to remind you, we are gearing up to our 100th episode of the Better Events podcast, and we want to hear from you and why you love events. So click the link in the show notes and you can fill out a very short form where you can either submit it written or you can record yourself so you'll hear yourself on a future episode of the Better Events podcast. Without further ado, let's get into the episode.
Welcome to the Better Events Podcast. Join two event strategists, Logan Clements and Mary Davidson, who believe we can all create, host, and attend better events. In this podcast, you will learn about event strategy and actions that you can use today as an event host, planner, or manager. Hear directly from the people who are creating innovative and inspiring events today and tomorrow, and grow your business along the way. Now, let's get started, and thanks for listening to the Better Events Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. In today's episode, we are talking all about questions that you all have sent in. So this is a fun episode. We're really excited about it. This is our listener mailbag question episode. So we're going to dive in because you sent in some really good questions. But of course, before we do, we have our conversation starter for today. So Logan, it's March 1st. Can you believe it? It's spring. What are you looking forward to this spring?
Yeah, I can't believe we're already in spring. That means, you know, we've gotten through a pretty busy season. I know Mary, you and I are kind of in the heat of things right now, but some spring activity that I'm very excited for, and it's going to sound dorky, but I'm actually looking forward to doing some weeding, like in the garden. My partner is a landscape architect and he has a family farm, and I've never been someone with a green thumb. I have the opposite of whatever a green thumb is, but for whatever reason, it is quite cathartic to like sit and weed a section of the garden, and they tend to not get that many weeds. So it's kind of nice. You can make progress pretty quickly. But just popping like a podcast on, like the Better Events podcast, except I don't know if I'll listen to us while weeding, usually a crime podcast or a pop culture podcast that I listen to. And it's just fun. And I can't wait because it's too cold, right? You know, too cold earlier. You got to wait until like March, April. So Mary, how about you? What are you looking forward to this spring?
Not doing that, not weeding. That my back hurts just thinking about that. Good for you. I think this spring, something I'm looking forward to is like I'm like super impacted by being able to go outside. Like I love being outside, similarly to like what you were saying, but I'm just excited to go on more walks and enjoy the warmer weather that's coming. That might be like a lame answer, but I'm genuinely like thrilled about getting outside more. Hopefully we can normalize like taking meetings on your phone while walking around your neighborhood. Maybe it depends the kind of meeting. But anyway, I'm going to try to start implementing some of those. And so I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, there's a little like tip before we even get started, listeners. If you can start dictating, Mary and I have a couple check-ins we do. And one of them we've specifically said is a phone call to take the pressure off of having to do a video call. Because yeah, I'm very pro meetings when walking. That's usually actually most of my calls with other event professionals. I'll give them the option of like a video call or a phone call. And most likely they'll be like phone call. And I'll be like, great, I'm taking you on a walk. We're going outside. But yeah, listeners, we have loved hearing from you so far. Thank you to everyone who submitted your questions. Don't worry if you didn't submit a question. You can always send us an email at bettereventspod@gmail.com or message us on social media. We will always, we'll probably do this again in a future episode. And we always love hearing from you. But I also want to plug, if you follow us on Instagram and you did not see our lovely post that Mary created, that was a callback to Blue's Clues and the play on mailbag. I genuinely laughed out loud when I saw that. So hopefully, listeners, you enjoyed that too. If you or a sibling or someone you know watched Blue's Clues growing up, that spoke to my heart. But Mary, I don't know what inspired you to go that way, but it was quite lovely.
Thank you. I was going to go with the newer Steve, but I went with the old school Steve just to assume that maybe that would catch some people's attention since a lot of us grew up with old school Steve. So take a look at it.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. Well, yeah, so let's just jump into this so we have as much time as possible to answer these great questions. But our first one is from Jenny. She mentioned you had a fantastic run a show template. I listened to the MC episode. Is there an MC template you like that incorporates housekeeping items and self-care for your events?
So first of all, the Run of Show template, thank you. We get so many emails about the Run of Show template. So if you're listening to this episode and this is clear back and you're like the beginning of the podcast, we had an episode about Run of Shows. Yes, we still offer the Run of Show template. And that's, I think, now one of our more common questions is, are you still giving that away? Yes, absolutely. Send us an email if you want that. It's something a lot of people seem to find value from. So we're grateful for that. So yes, as far as the script side of things for an MC and templates for housekeeping items and things like that, I guess, as I kind of just said, my brain went straight towards script templates. And I do have some of those. They are pretty, mine specifically are pretty focused to fundraising events. And so it's a little more niche. Logan, I'd be curious to hear if you have any templates or something like that. But I will say that there are definitely components that we can hopefully answer for you today and give you some of these components of the templates. Of the script so that you can create your own template. So before we give some of those, Logan, is there anything that you use that's already templated?
This is a tough question because I feel like I have templates, but they're for specific events. Like I don't have a universal MC template script because so many of my events are so different, but I'll often utilize like my sports. So if I have a script that's for football, sometimes I can adjust that for volleyball or a different sport, but it would really not apply to a corporate event or a nonprofit. So that is one of the few things that I don't work off of a template as often as I think. It's like only rare if I have to do something from scratch would I come up with that. But it is helpful if you're doing something that's either a repeatable event or a similar or multiple events in a year that you as an organization or you as a planner, I would encourage you to make one and keep it on file. So often if I have a repeat client, I'll go back to my folder from the year before and take that script and either just use it as reference, or if they're doing a very similar set event, I'll actually copy it over and then just start dropping in different names and things like that. So I don't think it's as useful for me as my run a show template is. That's like so much. I use that in almost every project I do.
Yeah, I will get clients asking like, what are some general things that we should include in a script? But never am I charged with drafting the copy for that script. That's like a very specific job for someone who's good at speech writing and things like that. And also a lot of MCs come like knowing what they want to say and how they're going to present. But I guess to further like give just like some examples, and once again, this is kind of more like on the fundraising side, but typically it's a like before, like around when the doors open, it's the MC coming on saying like, welcome, thank you, like some voice acknowledging the fact that people are here. This is before like the event actually starts, if you will. It's just when people are arriving. So just occasional, not too many, occasional announcements like that is where I would start. And then also, when it starts, there's actually a little bit of controversy if your event has sponsorships, whether you do that while people are walking around or when the event actually starts and people are seated. It's kind of boring information, so you don't want to lose people, but a lot of times you have to acknowledge those sponsorships at some point. So whether you're doing that before the event starts or when the event actually starts, that's kind of to your purview and sponsorship benefits. But then also something that is really known to do here in the Seattle area is to do a land acknowledgement. And so that's something that I see in most events is to start off with that. And usually it's nice to have someone come from a local tribe or someone who can come and give that land acknowledgement. And so that's something that's also more standard here, I would say, which is really nice to do. And then you go into the welcome of your, the programmatic component of your event, and you get into that content. So another thing that can happen during this time sometimes is like a recognition piece, or you can save recognitions for the end of the event. I would probably say save them for the end, depending on who it is, but people always want to honor folks. So I'm going to say have your MC keep it towards the end because you're there for a purpose. The purpose isn't necessarily honoring that person. It could be, but it might not be. So save it for the end. Those are like the main things that are coming to my mind. I hope this is somewhat helpful to get you thinking, but it's really just the templated part could be the starting and the end. The middle is really where the program, the content, the MC, like they need to come in and help you build that out.
Yeah. And I'd also add to that list a like emergency response announcement of some form. Again, not like necessarily plugged into the script anywhere, but this is something you'll see if you go to a sporting event in person. They'll often, I believe in most places, it's like regulated, they have to show kind of an evacuation plan, like, and in case of emergencies, please see, just like an airplane would. This is something that I haven't done at corporate events as a part of the show, but it is helpful to have that language on hand if something happens. That's like for sports, we have like language. If there's an injury, again, we never hope for an injury, but if it happens, it's really helpful to have that already written out for your host or your MC. So whatever for your specific case that could look like, I would highly encourage you to at least have it written down ahead of time so that you're all on the same page. But Mary, I agree, like all those other parts. And I think it's also really helpful to talk to your MC or talk to your organization to figure out what their process is, because some MCs really want, and you know, from that episode that we did with Casey, like some of them want word by word written out. Some just want bullet points. Sometimes it's the organizer wants everything word by word, and some just wants bullet points. And so figuring out what fits for that event will help save you time creating stuff that maybe isn't needed. Or like Mary said, if you have someone who's actually writing the script, or maybe your client's writing the script, helping them prepare enough information so your MC is prepared, but not overproducing if there's someone that's a little bit more off the cuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the one other piece I'd like to mention is like the virtual event component. Logan, I was thinking of like when we've spoken at something, sometimes there is a moment of like, here's the expectations, like, please be on camera. Or maybe it doesn't matter if you're on camera. Like I've noticed, right, in virtual events, folks will actually do those things at the beginning too. That's pretty different than an in-person event, right? And so I guess there is its own scripting and things like that that's applicable to virtual events as well.
One that if you want to reach out, maybe Mary has a template that she can share with you for her specific ones. But I think just keeping a running document for yourself of kind of these common things that come up for you, you can start to create your own based on the exact kind of event you're working.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you so much. And then our next question is from Hannah. Hannah asked, this one, Logan, I'm going to ask it directly to you. Logan, you've mentioned that one way you got involved was by helping at other events whenever you could and making connections there. How did you find those events to get involved with? And how did you choose what would be the most beneficial?
I want to say my first reaction to your question is a lot of it was just trial and error. Especially when I was new to the event industry, I just really wanted event experience. And so to me, any event, and it was just people I knew socially, or a friend of a friend knew someone in events that I could just get my foot in the door to go and like work with and volunteer at. Especially, it sounds like you're kind of hinting to how much we've talked about some volunteer events. And so that was helpful. And then now more recently, as I've gotten more established in the event industry, I kind of choose the events that are going to have people that I would want to connect with running them and kind of at them. So like I volunteered for an MPI event, Meeting Professionals International, which has meeting professionals are the attendees, and it's also meeting professionals running the event. So by volunteering, I was kind of double dipping, where I would get to meet the people running the event, but also be then around the attendees who are also people that I would want to meet. So that was kind of where I would choose. It was probably one or the other. It was either like the people running it was usually my top tier of why I wanted to participate in events, so I could meet the people behind the scenes. And then the second tier would be if I wanted to meet the participants more broadly for like the sporting events too. That was just like, I want to work at the Olympics, and the only way to work at the Olympics is to get Olympic experience. And so I volunteered with Team USA, had an opportunity to be at the Olympics. And that was just like, I'm going to take whatever opportunity I can, because I want to be at the Olympics. So there's really like a multi-way approach to it. And then from going to it once, I kind of was able to be like, okay, did I get the experience I needed? And I don't need to go back again, whether it's volunteering again or as an attendee, or is it something that I think is like a long-term relationship? I currently have a client that I volunteered for their event for the last couple years. And then this past year, they finally hired me to actually run the event and pay me to run it, because I'd had all that experience from working with them in a smaller but volunteer capacity. So it did lead to paid work. So there's also that.
Yeah, I think if there's an event that I'm curious about trying, I wanted to learn more about a certain kind, that's when, like Logan was kind of saying, I'm like way more willing to just like get my foot in the door somehow and do something, even if it's cheaper for free, just so that I can learn about it. And so, yeah, I would say echoing what Logan said, to find those types of opportunities, I wouldn't see a harm in reaching out to like local event companies near you and saying like, you know, like be professional when you reach out and say that you just want to learn more about these kinds of events. So if they ever need a volunteer, that you're responsible and dependable and would love the opportunity to volunteer at the next event. If I got an email like that, I'd be like, wait, are you for real? Like, I'd love to take you up on that offer. And then I'd probably like want to meet you to make sure you're not crazy. But like, I think making the ask, like the worst people can say is no. So just find some of these event companies, reach out to them, offer yourself as a volunteer or organizations, right? Depending on what the kind of event is, just reach out and then offer yourself. So I would say it's not too difficult to find the type of event near you. So if that's what you're looking for, is just to experience the type, that's an easy way to do it. But if it is something specific like the Olympics, then yeah, just getting in touch with Logan or the right people who maybe can get you in touch with an opportunity like that. So I think your question is good. I think it's important. I think as we've continued to discuss, there's a line there between how long that you do that. Once you feel like you've kind of experienced it, just don't forget your worth and your value. So I concur.
Great. Our next listener question comes from Jessica. She asks, can you share your story of when and how you started and grew your legal business?
Yeah. So legally, I'm an LLC. Logan, are you? You're an LLC. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we both are. Yeah, the legal components to that. So we're both in Washington State, right? So it differs from state to state. And I would say it was a confusing process for me. So the main thing, like as far as, let's see, this is a story. Share your story of when and how you started and grew your legal business. So I was employed and decided I wanted to go off on my own. And so I made the leap. And in the meantime, I did get a business license, because getting a business license is like pretty simple and it's pretty inexpensive. And so that just means that I basically like registered myself as an LLC and like, but didn't have any employees or anything. So it was like way more simple. And so, yeah, I got that. And the one of the main reasons, honestly, I got that is because folks, I got a couple opportunities and they would ask for my W-9 and I didn't want to give them a W-9 with my social security number on it. This is just the whole thing. And so I gave them one with my, I think it's the EIN number is the alternative of your business. And so that also means that I had to apply to get an EIN number at that time so I could then give them a W-9, and they want the W-9 so that they can pay you. And so it all just kind of like trickled. It's like, oh, I'm going to do this because somebody needs this. And so now's the time that I'm going to do that. Now, Logan, we can't have this conversation without calling out SCORE. And SCORE is part of a lot of, it's national, I believe, SCORE, or the Small Business Association as the SBA as an alternative, perhaps in your area. But SCORE has a small business startup resource. And that is like what I just followed to a T. So that is 100% what I would recommend to anyone and everyone, is find your local like governmental resource, and they can walk you through it either probably verbally, but this is an online, you know, version that can help you start that legally. But yeah, I guess I have a few more thoughts, but I'm going to cut myself off there for now. Logan, tell me, how did you start your business legally?
Yeah, I probably did a little bit different than you, where I, from the get-go, I am a big rule follower. And so I like immediately when I went freelance, luckily my dad had also had his own company that he started back in 2008, because the recession, he went out on his own. And so he opened an LLC. So I kind of had someone to follow, of just seeing how easy it was to set one up, even if I didn't know how I wanted to use it. So went out on my own because I had been working full time and I really just needed to take back my time to find space for if I loved events more, or if I loved marketing, which is what I was doing at the time. And so back in October, 2016, I think my final day of work was September 30th. And I like October 1st opened my company as an LLC. And I, at the time, I was based abroad, but my business was based in Pennsylvania. So I currently actually own technically two businesses. I have one business in Pennsylvania that has a branch here in Washington State that I had to then go through a whole thing of opening that when I moved here in 2019. But that is kind of how I started it on the legal side. Similar to you, Mary, it was nice then having, yeah, that EIN number is what you get from the IRS. And so it's just really helpful for your W-9s. And it just, every argument I heard for why as an independent contractor you should have an LLC or some business entity is it just provides a layer of legal protection between your business and your clients and yourself as an individual. And so should something happen, that LLC stands for limited liability company, it's limiting your liability so that the buck would stop if something happened at my business versus going after me and all of my personal assets. So that's like, again, Mary and I, neither of us are lawyers, but our own personal journeys with it. I don't know if there's a right time to do it. I just know as you get bigger and take on bigger clients, they're going to want that those W-9s, they might need insurance and things that are just easier when you're set up as a business.
I completely agree. That's what I was going to add. So you nailed it. Hopefully that's helpful for you. We're not, you know, legal experts, but there's so many resources out there that have helped us and we know that they can help you too. So,
and we should link, Mary, our past episodes that we've done where we've really dived into starting an event business. We'll put those in the show notes for you. If you want to dive in more, cause I feel like we can always do more episodes on it. We never have enough time to talk about starting your own business.
Yeah, that sounds great. So next, then, go ahead.
I was going to go on to our next question.
Oh.
Do you have anything else to add to Jessica's
question? No, I was going to ask you the next question, but go ahead. You got it.
Ah, I got you. This is fundraisers, Mary. Come on. I know. All right. Our next listener question comes from Kim. Looking for effortless fundraisers. So Mary, get your wheels turning. She says, I can think of a thousand kid things, but looking for adult stuff. We have so many actual events going on. I thought of partnering with a local florist for Valentine's Day, and she's donating a portion of the sales. Wondering if there's anything you girls have done. We have large employee base, 2,500 people, and a weekly newsletter to get fundraisers out there. So effortless fundraising ideas.
So Kim, great question. My brain is like going a million directions right now, and I'm trying to figure out which way to take it. But I think I'm curious, and you're not here to answer this for me, Kim, so I'll just talk. But for more context on if these are just fundraisers, like you mentioned, doing a portion of the sales with a local florist. I mean, that's where my brain goes, is local partnerships. Like you'll see people partner with local restaurants and they'll do a give back day, things like that. So if we're talking like fundraising in general, there's like lots of simple localized things that you can do. But of course, I'm always going to put, you know, an event spin on it. So if you want more like general fundraising stuff, you definitely reach out and we can talk about it. But for this purpose, I'm going to put an event spin on it. So still effortless event fundraisers, like do those words really go together? I don't know. It's hard to make an effortless event fundraiser. But there's definitely ways that you can simplify it. And I say simplify it in a way so that it really just accomplishes what you need it to accomplish. So it's great that you have the reach with the 2,500 and a weekly newsletter to get the fundraisers out there. So it seems like you could garner a lot of support in one way or another. All that to be said, looking for adult stuff, you could do one of the things I love is because I think a lot of people know I'm pretty opinionated about galas, is doing an un-gala. You could call it something else, but I've seen it called that, which is basically a way like more laid back night out for adults, which still has a like ask and maybe even a raise the paddle fundraising component, but it knocks out like much of the typical like auction items. And it's really just mission driven and an enjoyable night out for adults and their friends. It's still a fundraiser, but it's, as hopefully I'm describing, it's like way more simplified. So things like that. I've seen people do performances, like if you can incorporate live music or live performers, live artists, something like that, it's fun. I've seen live art. Oh, I can't remember what it's called, but they set themselves up in like a boxing ring and it's like four artists and they compete during a designated time. And it's a fundraiser, but they're competing to like win this competition and people are all like seated around them. And it's like the energy is like insane. And there's like a really animated MC and things like this. So it's like it's a way for adults to get out. And it's like this weird art competition, not weird, not to call it weird, but you know, it's just like this interesting, unique idea. I think people just want like something that's different. So if the goal is for adults to get together and raise funds, just ask yourself what they want to do and what's going to hit their heartstrings. So I could answer this like way more in depth, but I'm going to stop there. Logan, what do you think? Anything you want to add to this question?
Yeah, I think if it's just, I mean, cash, you sound like you can think of 1,000 kid things, if that means like kid related, but to echo what Mary said, like who your target audience wants to do. Like I'm thinking here in Seattle, we love breweries. So doing a night where you partner with a local brewery and a percentage of the sales go to your cause, or people here love their dogs and their children as well. And so doing something that incorporates their dogs. We had Casey Catherwood talking about a dog fashion show, and you know, there's kind of creative ways there, but even the lowest hanging fruit of, I know my younger brothers in college, and his team has raised money just by doing like a partnership with Chipotle, which I think they offer it pretty easy for anyone to sign up for, that a portion of what their sales are could go donated to the team. So that's kind of also whatever your employee base might, you know, identify strongly with could be an easy fundraiser. And then my last one would be a virtual event that we did with a client was a drag trivia. And so Mary, you talked about performers. So like a drag show is really fun. Drag trivia was really fun as a combination, or I've seen drag bingo. Again, you'd have to coordinate with the, you know, with the performer as well as a venue, or you could do it virtually. And that's just like levity and fun while fundraising at this on the side of it is kind of the focus that I would take. But send us an email, Kim, if you need more ideas or answers to Mary's questions, because I know she could probably talk about this. You could talk about this, Mary, for like an hour.
I could, yes. So had to limit myself there, but thank you for your thoughts. And hopefully that's helpful, Kim. Next tip, we have a question from Christine. Christine says, I came across your episode explaining a run of show template. Oh, run of show template again. Or a ROS. I recently started a new job as an executive assistant and was asked to create one for an event that is happening soon. I am reaching out to know if you are still emailing listeners a copy of the template. We answered this question. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
This was in here, Mary, in case we didn't get to it. So yes, listeners, we are still offering the run a show template. As Mary mentioned at the top, it is so popular. So if you're interested, it is free 99, which just means free. So send us an email if you are interested in that. That is like, again, Mary and I continue to use in our process. So it is very useful.
This is from Timothy. Timothy's asking, I currently own an AV business and would like to partner with more event spaces. What do event spaces look for in an AV/event production company? Logan, take it away.
Yeah, Timothy, I think this is a good question to ask. And a lot of it, again, it varies based on the venue of what they're looking for. But I think certain principles are helpful, especially if you're connecting with someone who's local. A lot of event spaces will be asked if they have a local recommendation. So making sure geographically you're really focusing in wherever you're based and letting them know what your capabilities are. And this is a big one of making sure you're pretty honest with what you're able to do or what equipment you physically own versus maybe if you partner with other AV production companies, what you could be capable of if you had a big enough event. I feel like just looking, knowing what you're able to provide and figuring out what they already have in-house and how you can kind of talk to their system. That is something when I have event clients and we're at a venue, we'll ask them for their recommendation to the vendors, especially if it's someone who knows their system and has worked an event with them before. So this is back to, I think, Hannah's earlier question talking about how do you volunteer, you know, how do you choose events to work in? If you are really like a new AV company in an area, it could be worth volunteering and maybe not donating your services completely, but doing a partial donation as a foot in the door with certain venues for a certain event to try to get to know those people. And then an alternative would be to get to know planners and producers, and they can help introduce you to venues. The venue route is a really strategic way to go, but I also think sometimes you never know where those event leads are going to go. But just really being transparent of what you can do, how available you are if you aren't really booked up with other events, and how you're looking to make a long-term partnership would make a venue a lot more enticed to talk to you and work with you if you're like, here's what I can do. I'm new, but I'm looking to build here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm going to be here for, you know, forever is what we're looking for, because people love that kind of long-term project versus those long-term relationships versus something for the short term. Mary, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I just love what you said. Like, Timothy, I think that's so, so key, is just to go to venues and see what they could do to better offer the AV service to their clients and see if you can fill the void. Even if they already have the stuff, maybe they don't have teleprompters or something like that, and you could come in and be like, oh, I can do that. So anyway, yeah, just see where the void is and see if you can fill it. Let us know how it goes.
And our next question, this is submitted by one of our listeners, Cora, and she recorded her question for us, Mary.
My question is, I'm curious how you guys started your own business, which I'm sure is something you've been asked many times, but in terms of the very, very first steps that you took after deciding that you wanted to run your own business, what did those very first steps look like for you?
I feel like this dovetails so nicely into Jessica's question.
And I'm trying to like even like rack my brain and be like, what exactly did I do? I don't think it was an overnight decision. So I think I'm trying to think like, how did I actually like take the first step? Well, I'll keep it succinct, Logan, and then pass it to you. But essentially, I had a couple opportunities when I was employed to plan other events. So going in that way was like way easier for my brain because I already had a couple opportunities outlined. And so that made me take that leap. And that leap included, having these two clients. And so getting started on that work and then immediately trying to make connections, which is when Logan and I connected. And so it was trying to do good work and then also meet the right people to help me be more successful. That was other planners, vendors, people like that. And so I just started networking. I did a ton of venue walkthroughs because I was like, I need to know the spaces that are available near me. And then virtual started. So I was like, okay, I'm going to learn everything about virtual events right now. Because when you start your business, most likely you're not as busy as you will be because you will build it over time. And so that's your time to really learn all the things that are going to help you be more credible in the area and be more successful. So I would say spend your time when you first start, obviously like the legal components that we've talked about, but also building yourself up so you're prepared to take on clients when they come.
Yeah, I think for me, I mentioned it earlier, but really also like buying my web domain and web building that website. So I first had to decide what I wanted to be called. And honest listeners, I feel like I might have mentioned this on an earlier episode, but like I chose Logan Strategy Group because it had my name in it. Strategy is nice and broad, and group gave me the opportunity if I wanted to grow, I could, but I wouldn't have to, versus just, you know, copywriting or opening a business as my name. And so once I had that, I knew I wanted to build a website because to me that legitimized what I was doing. So what, as Mary mentioned, like building that network and telling people, I wanted to have a website that they could go to. And it's funny because what my website looked like then looks very different than it does right now. But that was like a big project in October 2016 when I first started, because like Mary said, I didn't have as much work. So I had this free time to build my business. And then my other thing was I started telling a lot of people that I was freelance and looking for work. And I did a lot of this verbally. And I will say, if I could go back and teach myself one thing at that time, I probably would have done more of like getting the word out to my network on social media that wasn't my immediate network of people I was talking to, because I did a good job of verbally telling people I was freelancing, but on LinkedIn or Facebook or any of those social media, or even starting a newsletter, I didn't do that for years. But it would have been really helpful because now my business does, I do a lot of business with like second degree connections, like not the direct person I know, but then they're referring me to somebody else, or my name comes up in a conversation with somebody else. And that's where I've seen the power of my network. And I think when I first started, I wasn't super confident in that. But really, I feel like it's networking and figuring out, you know, what you need on the legal side.
And we could also talk about that more. So we'll try to link some of those past episodes too for you, Cora, but feel free to reach out and we're happy to chat more, of course. And our last question is from Jenny. Again, Jenny has a great question. She says, I recently learned about the new project. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Which provides a great resource and information on helping neurodivergent communities. Are there any practices you do in events to be inclusive towards neurodivergent communities? So great question. Logan and I were kind of recently involved in an event that focused on this community. So Logan, you want to take that one first?
Yeah, it's one that I know I aspire to make sure it becomes a larger part of the conversation of thinking about the neurodivergent community. But I feel like for me, it's just thinking through how some of the content's received at our events and making sure like we had a good point from one of our past guests about putting like GIFs in a slide can be really distracting. And for someone who maybe that's just taking away then from the message and it's getting away from the goal of that speaker's session. And then thinking through in person, you know, whether it's just disclaiming that there's going to be some very kind of sensory activity of bright lights and moving things and just disclaiming to your audience that you know that that's coming. It is unfortunately something that I wouldn't say has been a priority. And I hate to say that, but a lot of my organizers, it's coming up more that we want to have a space, especially on onsite events, a space available for people in the neurodivergent community, especially those that recharge by kind of having a quieter kind of, you know, separated from the larger group, a little place to kind of go and just retreat for a little bit. And I have an event coming up that we have several spaces that we set aside for that. But it is one that I think I will be checking out your resource there, Jenny, because it is something that I want to constantly be bringing up to my clients. But Mary, how about you? Is there any practices that you do at your events?
I would say just, and this goes along with a lot of things, but also, and this is just give people the opportunity to Reach out if they have something specific that you can cater to them, whether that's in the registration form, you know, they're able to say something specifically, or email, send an email and you can help accommodate them appropriately. But also just like being really communicative about what your event's going to be like so people can prepare. I think a lot of it is being taken off guard. And so if you can be able to prepare and set expectations for what the event is going to be like, they can opt into the parts that work for them. And I think being able to make everything as inclusive as possible is obviously the goal, but communicating what the event actually is going to entail is really, really helpful in that piece. Yeah. And I just echo everything that Logan said. There's lots of, I think, room for making things a little bit less distracting. I think we like throw everything into all the stuff, especially if it's virtual, and that's a lot for everybody. So let's just try to cater to the neurodivergent community a little bit more in that component too. Anyway, those are my immediate thoughts. We've been lucky to be, like we said, a part of an event that focused on this community. And so hopefully we can continue to be involved, and ask us again next year and we'll come with more ideas for you too.
And if there's any listeners who are listening to this and they're like, Logan and Mary, I have so many ideas, please reach out, because we're also always looking for guests on this podcast who are a little bit more experienced in some of these areas than Mary and I are, so we can learn and teach the Better Events community as well. That brings us to the end of our mailbag questions. Listeners, thank you so much for submitting your questions. Once again, if you did not get a chance to, we are still collecting answers for our 100th episode where we want to hear from you. You can send it written and we'll read it, or you can record like Cora did and we'll feature it on our upcoming episode. Before we wrap up, I know we did tease on social media that we were going to do a giveaway for a listener. So Mary, I think we've done a random name generator from everyone that you've heard their questions from. And the winner is?
The winner is Timothy. Timothy, thank you for your AV question. Thank you for your participation, everyone, too. We want to, this season of the podcast, we're really trying to get listeners more involved in things, doing things like this, and then a couple other episodes that we have coming up. And so just please participate. We are so happy to hear from you. So thank you, Timothy, and others for participating in this episode.
And Timothy will be reaching out to you to get you your prize. Congrats. And that brings us to our bonus tip, Mary, which you have this week.
I do have the bonus tip this week. Okay, so for our bonus tip today, I was kind of thinking about something. So if you're an event manager or in charge of an event in some capacity, there is definitely going to be a time when someone turns to you and asks for your opinion, like obviously, right? So they're going to ask you what they think that they should do or what they think you can do to make the event better in some capacity. And so my bonus tip is simple, but it's just be ready to share your opinion. And if you don't have an opinion, which sometimes happens, we get caught off guard, tell them that's a great question. I would love to take some time to think of some ideas, and I'll come prepared to the next meeting with ideas on how we can do that, blah, blah, blah. And I've done that once because I was like, oh, I need to give this more brain thought, and I definitely have opinions, so let's talk about it more in the next meeting. And I think there's no harm in that. But the bonus tip is to be prepared in one way or another to share your opinion as the expert.
Thanks, Mary. Great bonus tip. And that brings us to the end of our episode. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Better Events Pod. You can send us an email at bettereventspod@gmail.com. You can also connect personally with Mary or I on LinkedIn. We love hearing from you. Trust me, especially if you submitted a question, feel free to connect with us. And as always, we thank you for listening, and we'll be back in your feeds again next Wednesday.